So hello and welcome to Lunch Bites with Cherie. I thought I'd talk a little today about depression and depressed feelings, because depression is such a common mental health problem and it's estimated to affect between 1 and 2% of the population in any one time. And I suspect, judging by the clients that I'm seeing, a lot more now. So depression symptoms can vary amongst people, but generally encompass a feeling of tiredness and loss of energy, a sadness that doesn't go away, perhaps a loss of self-esteem and self-confidence, difficulty concentrating, and not being able to enjoy things that are usually pleasurable, fun, and interesting. And then it's often accompanied by a feeling of anxiety all the time. And that might make you avoid other people, sometimes even close friends or relatives. I know that's particularly challenging at the moment. And we are such tribal animals, we need our connections. But if we're feeling anxious or depressed, that can lead to avoidance of other people. Feelings of depression often encompass feelings of helplessness and hopelessness, you know, about what we can do in the situation, especially now. You might experience sleeping problems, either difficulties in getting off to sleep or waking up much earlier than usual, or just intermittent waking up during the night. And that then can lead to a sense of tiredness. Within depression, there tends to be strong feelings of guilt or worthlessness, and maybe finding it hard to function at work. Loss of appetite, loss of sex drive and other sexual problems, along with physical aches and pains. And as you can see from the list that I've just given you, the symptoms vary in severity and they vary from person to person. And as a clinician, I see depression symptoms from mild to moderate, and with the consent of a GP, severe. So mild depression tends to be reactive. It tends to be transient. It's maybe as a result of something that's happened, like a bereavement or a breakdown of a relationship. And some people seem to be more prone to that than others. Moderate depression will manifest in the low general mood and the more pessimistic attitude. And sufferers of moderate depression might well slow up and have no motivation to sort of find a solution. And the severe depression tends to be longer term and constant. And that's the kind of depression, if it lasts for more than 2 weeks, then you really should seek help from your GP. And there's absolutely no shame in having a little medication for that, because that can often help you over the hurdle and just, you know, to help you and get you back on track. So what are we looking at? Well, it impacts us physically, feelings of depression or being depressed, because it actually suppresses our immune system. Sad people secrete more interleukin 6, which is an inflammatory substance which results in colds. They have higher cortisol and lower catecholamines, which are neurotransmitters, which cause long-term lasting inflammation. And also they tend to produce more fibrinogen, which is active in blood clotting. So results in more blood clots and the sludgy circulation. So a feeling of depression or sadness on a long term is really not healthy. And especially now. But negative emotions also narrow your thinking. When you're really angry, your attention gets really narrowed. And you might find yourself ruminating about a transgression or thinking about that person that upset you. And your energy and your thoughts are probably centered on, how do you protect yourself? How do you defend yourself? How do you fight back? Classic fight or flight response. There's research that showed that optimism is related to depression, because the more optimistic you are, the less likely you are to experience symptoms of depression. And that kind of makes sense, because if your belief is that the future is going to be bright, it might help buffer against feelings of depression. So more about that later. So just a little look at pessimists, because pessimists are people who habitually think a bad situation is going to last forever and undermine everything and that there is nothing they can do about it. As we've just said, that negative mood produces narrowed attention and much more critical and analytical thinking, that rumination. And people who habitually experience negative moods also fall back defensively on what they know and ironically follow orders well. And they're much better at thinking, what is it that's wrong here? And what if? So what about optimists? Optimists are people who believe that setbacks are temporary and changeable and local to them. They don't become helpless. A positive mood produces greater well-being, which enhances learning and produces a more creative and holistic, a broader way of thinking. And they're much better at thinking, what is it that's right here? And we actually know that optimistic thinkers cope with stress more effectively. Perhaps because they've got the belief that the future will be bright, what they're going through today isn't as difficult for them to handle as a pessimist. And in fact, Albert Ellis taught us that it's not the activating event, that is, the thing or things that happen to us or trigger us, that determine the way we feel and what we do. It's what we say to ourselves, our beliefs, which can be a result of our upbringing, our gender beliefs, our cultural beliefs, the beliefs of the company that we're in, the beliefs of those people around us that we're not even aware of until we start to nail into it. And also our thoughts about the situation that impacts how we feel and what we do. Even our physiology, how we feel in our body. So let's have a little think about the story that we tell ourselves. Or as Martin Seligman has termed it, our explanatory style. How we explain the causes of the good and the bad things that happen to us. And he called it explanatory style because it's our style of explaining the good and bad in our lives. And what he's found is that most of us have a habitual, reflexive way of explaining to ourselves why these things happen. So what Seligman and his colleagues have found out is that when something bad or good happens to us, our brains automatically generate answers to the question why. What caused that? And that we can access our answers to the question why, our explanations, among what he called three dimensions. So the first dimension is internal versus external. So some of us, when something bad happens, our brains focus on an internal explanation for why that bad thing happened. We believe that we are the cause of that bad event. Internal. Other people, when something bad happens, believe that external factors are the cause of that bad event. The external factors might be other people or circumstances, the tools, weather, a virus. The second dimension is stable versus unstable. Does your brain tend to focus on the stable cause of the problem, that things are unchangeable, that are permanent, that you can't do anything about? That's the definition of stable. Or does your brain tend to focus on the unstable cause of the problem, the things that are fleeting and temporary, that you actually can exert some control over? And then the third dimension is global versus specific. So when something bad happens in your life, Does your brain focus on the causes of the problem that are going to lead to lots of other problems too? That it's going to bleed into lots of other areas of your life? Or do you explain the causes of your setbacks as a very specific cause? Yes, that led to the negative outcome, but it's not going to lead to other negative outcomes in every aspect of my life. So here we have the dimensions. We've got internal versus external. Stable, is it going to change or unstable? Stable, is it not going to change, or unstable, is it going to change? And then global, is it going to affect every aspect of my life? And specific, is it just one specific aspect? Pessimistic thinking, leading to depression and depressed thoughts, is a tendency to believe that whatever caused the problem is internal, it's all about you, it's stable, it's completely unchangeable, and it's global. It's going to undermine every area of your life. And it tends to be a rumination on the past. Anxiety, however, tends to be a negative expectation of the future. So what's optimism? Well, it's external, unstable, and a specific way of explaining a setback. So now that finding that optimism seems to be a driver, a mediator, has shown up in research, the leaders in the field of cognitive therapy as a treatment for depression have shown that by going through a course which includes learning how to challenge these explanatory styles, the people that learn these skills through things like cognitive behavioural therapy, but other interventions as well, show less depression later. Their optimism actually increases and symptoms of depression decrease. So how can we start to challenge the story that we tell ourselves? We can start to become aware of the main thinking traps and learn to focus on behaviours as opposed to general worth. So we can start to become aware of thinking traps like mind reading. And mind reading is assuming you know what the other person is thinking, or expecting that other person to know what you're thinking. And often when you're assuming what that other person is thinking, it's that you're assuming they're thinking something ill of you, something negative of you. But the effect that mind reading has in general is that it blocks communication. Because if I already believe I know exactly what's going on in someone else's mind, I know what they're thinking, I tend not to ask. So that can further lead to even more miscommunication, because I'm actually not asking to clarify the information. So another thinking trap is the me trap. Do you believe that you're the sole cause of every setback and problem? Because if you believe that, you're also probably believing that you're causing a lot of harm to others. In general, when people fall into that trap, the me trap, they tend to experience a lot of guilt and a lot of sadness. And if you're viewing every setback and problem as if it's my fault, I am the sole person to blame all this, you can imagine how that creates a pattern of over-experiencing guilt and sadness. And then there's a flip side of that coin, which is the them trap, where you believe that other people or circumstance are the sole cause of your setback and problems. Blaming other people, blaming the world, blaming circumstance, the weather, politics, virus, whatever, for the problems that you're confronting at the moment. And this, of course, leads to a lot of what we're seeing at the moment: anger, aggression, and frustration. And the them trap, blaming everything else for the problems that we're confronting or we're experiencing actually stops us looking at what we can do, at what we can take responsibility for, and start to look for a solution, maybe chunk things down a little, move the goalposts closer. What can we actually take agency with? What can we do? And then there's catastrophizing. Catastrophizing is the thinking trap in which you're wasting critical energy ruminating. That word, ruminating. You're going round and round and round on the rational worst cause case outcome of a solution or a situation. And actually, there's a lack of balance between your assessment of the threat, because that threat becomes huge. If you catastrophize, you're really good at seeing threats as looming and much bigger than they actually are. So you can underestimate the threat, but you're simultaneously underestimating your own resources to cope. And there tends to be three different brands or styles of catastrophizing. The downward spiral, whereas it's all going down the plug hole. The scatter shot, which is going to impact, it's like a scatter gun. You know, those pellets are going to impact every area of your life. And then there's the circling, just going round and round and round over the same problem and never coming to any solution. And the last thinking trap I'm going to make you aware of today is helplessness. And that's when you believe that a negative event, whatever it is going to impact all areas of your life and that you have no control. It's global and it's stable. It's the belief that bad things are here to stay. There's nothing you can do about it. And they're going to ruin every aspect of your life. And you don't feel like you have the energy to figure out solutions, no matter how small and what you can affect. And you might find yourself withdrawing and just giving up and just waiting things out rather than taking a step forwards and engaging the way an optimist would in finding the little things that you can actually do. So we really need to start to minimize this catastrophic thinking, because we no longer have to plan for famine, marauders, ice age, or survival. We're actually pretty safe. So let's gather some evidence and put things into perspective. When you come across a problem, a worry, something that is responsible for feelings of depression, gather evidence and start to put things into perspective. What's the best possible outcome? And what's the most likely outcome? Because we can always develop a plan for coping with the situations. And when we feel that we have agency, that we can actually impact our situation, it gives us the courage to practice the skills required. So I'm going to leave you with something now, which I hope will start you on the right track. And it's a gratitude exercise called Hunt the Good Stuff. To cultivate an attitude of gratitude. Yes, that old cliche. Be deliberate and go out and hunt the good stuff. And the exercise is called Silver Linings. Because I want you at the end of the day to write down three things that you're grateful for, and they've got to be different things every day. When you first start this exercise, it's going to be the big things like family and health. But as you go on, you'll find that you start to recognize the little things, like the sun was shining. Silver linings challenge yourself to think about, in a negative situation, is there anything out of that situation that you're grateful for? Was there any benefit that came from that negative experience? And that's probably a little harder to look for. Because I don't know whether you realise, but not only is there post-traumatic stress disorder, which everybody has heard of, but there's also something called post-traumatic growth. And that's when you have the ability to recognize that every experience in our life gives us skills and wisdoms that are absolutely unique. Unique to those experiences, but unique to us as well. And those wisdoms and learnings make us the amazing people that we are. And when we start to recognize that, we can start to help others. We can perhaps think about sending out some thanking emails for contributions, regular texts to family and friends, and cards and notes in crazy places, or even a great call out in staff newsletters, perhaps, or later perhaps doing some voluntary work in whatever small measure we can. So that's my exercise this week. The silver linings, the three things you're grateful for, and start to notice the changes. So I'm going to turn back on and stop recording.